Do you have your keys?
Yeah.
It's parked 3 blocks down on the right.
Welcome to Breaking Good, the official, unofficial podcast for AMC's Breaking Bad. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You know what time it is, right?
It is time to strip down to our tidy whities.
Cook up a little meth, a little podcasting meth.
Tidy whities, that's the exact opposite of the baggy whities that we just saw Walt strut out of that scene.
Yeah, right? He had to hold those things up.
Yeah, he had to hike up the crotch.
Yeah.
A little too much crotch.
I'm used to seeing Jesse do that, not Walt.
That's right.
Okay, so what are we doing this week?
We actually have an episode to recap.
We do. It's the series premiere, right?
Right, we can take
season premiere.
This is season premiere,
yeah,
yes.
Not series.
We got the lazy man out. We don't have to make up any content. We just have to feast upon the content
this
of Gilligan
is gonna be
and Company.
A pure recap, is that what you're saying? That's all we're doing?
I'm just saying it's a lot easier when they give you the meat.
Sure, yeah.
We bring the potatoes.
I've got potatoes. We've got a recap for you. We've got our analysis of the show. We've got some news. We've got some listener feedback. And then we're going to do a spoiler section at the end of it. That'll be after the music. So when you guys hear the music, our theme music, just shut it off if you don't want any spoilers.
And when we're saying spoilers, obviously we're talking anything that happened in episode 1 of season 4 is fair game.
Oh, yeah. Everything up to then.
Anything that's mentioned in interviews that talks about beyond that, that's what we're considering spoilers. So
absolutely.
You've been warned.
So before we get started... we got a really great shout out from the guys at Breaking Bad Edition last week. Mm-hmm. They did a pre-season 4 episode just like we did, and they spent a few minutes talking about our show. I wanted to do the same here because I thought that their show last week was really funny, really interesting. I kind of like that they don't just talk about Breaking Bad. I know some people are like, get to the Breaking Bad. I need my fix, man. I need my hit.
Need to crush and snort that.
Right.
Cast.
But I like that they don't totally do that because I'm a bit of a podcast sucker. I like personalities.
Okay.
So
you hate our cast, right?
Oh yeah. It's no.
It's devoid of personality.
But if you're like me, you should go head over to behindthecuttingedge.com. They do not only podcasts on Breaking Bad, but on other subjects as well, other shows, things like that. And check out their preseason episode, and then they're going to have one, I assume, coming out Wednesday. I think they said. So that'll be the season premiere for them. Yeah.
Oh, beat them by a day.
Go check that out. Here's my goal for this show. I want to get us onto the new and noteworthy section of iTunes.
All right. A worthy goal.
A very worthy goal. We will get a lot more listeners that way and the community will prosper 10 times. So we have 2 reviews right now. We got a couple of reviews that we'll go into, in the listener feedback section, but my goal is to get to 20 reviews this week, 20 written reviews. So I really, really, really want people to go help us get up there, help us grow this cast, help us grow the community around the show. Just go to iTunes, just go to our show, leave us a review. 5 stars, please. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but
right.
5 stars would be good.
You know, I've got at least 5 Gmail accounts, so I'm good for like a quarter of that. So
yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we're only asking the listeners to come up with the other 15, right?
Sure.
That's
sure.
Not too much.
No. Did you have anything you want to talk about before we get into the show, or should we go into the news?
Let's hit the news.
Okay. So there was kind of a feud online. Just before the season premiere between Chuck Klosterman and Jason Whitlock. And I guess these are 2 like sports commentators.
No, Chuck Klosterman's a big pulp culture guy. He's written, I think the book was like called Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. And he's got a lot of other, like, you know, he's written for the Rolling Stones, I think the National, but he's like, kind of like this, you know, pop culture guy, but he's also writing for Grantland.com, which is Bill Simmons' pop culture sports mashup site. And he came up with a column that said basically Breaking Bad's the best show ever on television.
Yeah, well, he was specifically comparing it to The Wire, which I know is one of your favorite shows. Yep. And it, I was kind of like the Chuck Klosterman in this situation, and you were the Jason Whitlock of the situation.
I don't know, because I'm... I think that right now, if The Wire Season 5 didn't come out, it would be hard for me to imagine something coming out better than The Wire. As good, sure. Mm-hmm. But since they kind of stumbled that last episode, and Breaking Bad's not done yet, and what we've seen so far of Season 4 is terrific, and what we've heard is terrific, I got to say, if they put out five quality seasons with their only stumble, and this is for my money only, was the I didn't like the two cousins storyline. I didn't like the airliner crash storyline. Mm-hmm. If those are the only two stumbles, that's not as bad as the drop ball that The Wire had, where the cops started fabricating evidence and faking a serial killer and that kind of just absurdist nonsense. So
Sure. It went a little off the deep end.
Right. And the other thing is, I think that Jason Whitlock is confusing and the most important show, which I think that The Wire is probably the most socially important show I've ever seen.
Well, I will get into that. I wanted to present it up front for people who haven't heard about the feud.
Gotcha.
So basically, Klosterman wrote this article about how great Breaking Bad is, and it's better than The Wire. And Whitlock took offense to this.
Yep.
And it looks like he took a pretty serious offense, because on his Twitter feed the next morning, he was saying things like, Klosterman's next Grantland attention grab, why Judas was better than Jesus. Kind of absurd. But then he gets almost offensive. He's like, I weep for America that shit was written by a respected thinker, and I really like Breaking Bad. That to me is borderline offensive. He's saying that this guy's writing absolute shit.
Well,
whereas the guy had a very, very well thought out argument, at least.
Yes, and the podcast, he admits that. But Whitlock's Twitter persona is that of kind of like a larger than life.
Yeah.
Like he says that he actually calls his persona on Twitter as Twitlock. Whitlock is like, he's a serious journalism, and his tagline is actually judge my columns, enjoy my tweets. So he's kind of doing just shocking, attention-grabbing.
See, I have a problem with that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, we never do shocking, offensive, attention-grabbing things.
That's our personality, though. He's creating a persona that's not his own for his Twitter account.
Yeah.
And he's creating multiple personas across his different mediums. It's hard to keep those straight. And which one is him? Which one should I take seriously? Which one should I not? You know?
I think he finds that amusing, though. I don't think he cares that you're confused or outraged that he would say something crazy
He probably doesn't.
Yeah. I know he doesn't, in fact.
But then on the BS Report podcast that you pointed me to, they were interviewing him about this situation. And like you said, he seems to think it was all about the importance of the show, whereas The Wire is more important. It deals with more social issues, more important issues than Breaking Bad. He seems to think that makes a show better by definition. I don't know that I agree with that.
It's hard to say which is more entertaining, which is more daring, because Klosterman was right. His main point was no TV show has ever done this, taken a hero and believably transformed him into a villain, which is the direction that it looks like the series is taking.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, nobody has taken such an unflinching look at the death of urban America like The Wire. But saying that The Wire is not necessarily always entertaining. It's very well written. It's gripping. But it can be hard to watch. And I guess so can Breaking Bad.
That episode last night was certainly hard to watch.
It's hard to say, because Breaking Bad is heading down the downward side of their second half of the series.
Yeah,
because it's going to, according to Gilligan, probably last five
spoilers.
Seasons. No, it's just going to it's going to be over one way or another after five seasons, is what he said publicly before. And you know, The Wire's already got five seasons out there, and it's a dead series at this point. So you could compare its whole body of work.
Yeah, you can judge the whole thing.
Now, I will say that anyone that thinks and makes a serious argument for Sopranos being the best television when you've got Breaking Bad, The Mad Men, and The Wire is insane.
I agree. And if they are making that case, they're trying to make the case based on it being the first to do what it did.
That's a valid point, but...
Not necessarily, because it doesn't do it the best.
Right.
It just does it first.
It's just like, you know, is Babe Ruth the best baseball player at all time?
Well, of course not.
I mean, but it's hard to compare eras and, you know.
Sure,
You know, like, he didn't work out a day in his life. He drank booze, smoked cigars, and whored, and then got up and slugged the bat, you know?
Sure, yeah.
So, but yeah, objectively, there's no way anyone can say that Sopranos is as good. And I also thought it was interesting that Whitlock thinks it's more likely that Mad Men will surpass The Wire, because again, he likes the fact that it touches on social issues.
Right. And here's my big problem with what he said on his Twitter account, which you're saying is different, quote unquote, persona, mm-hmm. versus what he said on the BS Report podcast. The other tweet that he made says, I will block people for pretending to agree with Klosterman. Hash, I'm not joking. If you're that stupid, I don't want to be connected to you.
Yeah.
Now, that is offensive. And that may be his persona on there. But then on the BS Report podcast, he goes on to state all these personal reasons. Like, he identifies with the city of Baltimore and the black culture and everything.
Right.
He states all these personal reasons why it is a better show.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And yet he's blasting people for not agreeing with him.
Yeah.
After stating that his own personal reasons for liking it.
Now, I don't know whether he would actually do that, but I do know he blocks people routinely.
he from sounds following like he his would.
Account, yeah. And I think it's kind of funny, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to tell when you don't know the personalities.
Yeah,
we've had this argument before because you like really like something, and I like tune in halfway through, and I'm like, I don't get it. This is stupid. And you're like, well, you got to understand the personalities. And that's. With Bill and Jason and Chuck, it's kind of, you got to understand all that. So, but he was, I think, legitimately hurt. I mean, Whitlock loves The Wire like I've never, I mean,
he like makes, a child.
Yeah. He loves The Wire like it's a son.
Yeah.
And he's given away over 90 Wire sets to over his Twitter account and like the different famous people.
Yeah.
I mean, he's all about trying to get people to watch The Wire because he thinks. And he's the other thing he mentioned, and then let's get off The Wire.
Yeah.
But he says The Wire has fans have an inferiority complex because throughout its whole run, it never got any Emmy nominations mm-hmm. for the actors, for the writing, for all that. And that's like, you know, when you got something that's serious quality that's just getting snubbed year after year after year, then you hear someone after the fact, this highly acclaimed, critically acclaimed AMC show that's like just, you know, the golden boy of the serious drama TVs get this nod. And it's like they actually said it like hurt him, like in the way he's like getting bullied in high school or something. I mean, that's kind of.
Yeah. No, I have a lot to say about The Wire, but I won't go into it here. I did like a lot of the stuff that he said, though. I totally agree with him that it was a very important show.
Yes.
Whereas Breaking Bad is mostly entertainment. I mean, they're doing something interesting with the characters, but it's for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, it's
not social commentary.
Yeah, it's not really saying anything about society important. That's not to say it's not an important show.
Sure.
Yeah. But anyway.
Okay. That's all I've got up front. You want to...
Nope. I guess if you want my news every day, I'm doing the Breaking Bad news, and I just try to hit the high notes of the coverage out there and the interviews, and some of it gets repetitive, but I try to only get the first take or the interesting take. So I'm saving most of my news for that thing.
Okay, great. Well, let's go into the recap.
Alrighty.
I feel like we need a bumper. We need some sort of music here to bring us into the recap.
Well, if you'd have given me a note, like I could have had something ready to go, but I don't.
We could do an a cappella version of The Boys Are Back in Town. I don't know.
Okay.
Here we go. So the episode opens up with a box cutter, a shot of the box cutter, cutting through the thing that holds the box closed. And we see Gale. And we're like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
Because there was, I didn't know this. Because I watched the entire series of Breaking Bad during the off season,
which
is nice that it was off the air for 13 months. But there was a lot of speculation that maybe Gale didn't actually die. That Jesse, they said, like the way that they shot that scene was ambiguous. I didn't see that myself, but opening like that was kind of a way. I had like a brief like what the F kind of moment before I realized, oh, it's a flashback.
Yeah, and actually Vince Gilligan was surprised himself that people didn't understand that, yes, Gale definitely got shot after the season finale. So I think that was in there as kind of a little just poke in the ribs.
Right.
Hey, is he dead?
Sure.
Yeah. So Gale starts talking to Gus as he's unpacking the equipment, and he's obviously intimidated by the quality of Walt's meth.
Right.
Because he's going on and on and on about how good this meth is.
Right.
And how much better it is than the meth he can cook himself.
Which is already outstanding.
Yeah, 96% like class, versus 99%.
99 point whatever.
Exactly. And I was thinking this whole time, Gale, just shut your mouth. Shut your mouth, man. You're talking yourself into the grave here.
Right.
You're sending yourself to the chamber.
Yep.
But he keeps talking, and eventually I think he convinces Gus to actually hire Walt.
Which is weird, because I'm going to get into this later. Well, I'm just going to get into this later, but I want to put a pin in it, yeah.
You should have put a ring on it. So it's interesting to me that he does decide to hire him, because he obviously likes quality, right?
Sure.
He's buying all the quality equipment for Gale. Right. Like, anything he needs, the highest quality, let's get it.
I would say that what Gus, everything Gus does, he does professionally.
Yeah.
He's kind of like my father. He would, you know, my dad would never half-ass a job, even when a job calls for half-assing. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And they're really, during this whole scene, they're really nailing home exactly why Gus needs Walt,
mm-hmm.
Because his meth is so good.
Mm-hmm.
But Gus doesn't consider him a quote-unquote professional.
Right.
So he didn't want to hire him.
I wonder how he feels about him now.
I think he feels he's even less of a professional.
Really?
To be honest. Yeah.
Really? See, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about it.
So then we see Gale's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And Gale is lying on the floor with a bullet hole under his eye.
Nice shot, Jesse.
Pretty good shot.
Right through the O-ring.
Normally, don't you go between the eyebrows? Is that...
I don't know, man. It's like... That's pretty dead. That's like a couple inches off dead center of this dude's head. Point blank range, of course.
Yeah. But there's a guy talking to the police on the phone saying, hey, guy's been shot.
Right.
There are two witnesses there, but we definitely know that Jesse shot Gale at this point.
Yes.
There's no question about it.
Yes. I thought there was some interesting details in the scene that mm-hmm. I got from Melissa Mayers from Entertainment Weekly, which I was really jealous of her recap. She hit a lot of stuff I didn't notice. But the clock on a shelf is flashing 10:13, which is Chris Carter, the guy that produced X-Files, his birthday. Yeah. And that was a recurring theme in the X-Files.
Yep.
And also that the camera pans on the Gale's table next to his lab notes. There's a copy of Stephen King's short story collection, Everything's Eventual.
Yeah.
And that the main story from that book is about the guilty conscience of a man whose job is to kill criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really, like, that's just a throwaway. I mean, I wouldn't have picked it up. I'm sure, like, not one out of 20 people watched an episode have picked that up, but it says so much.
See, and that's
Jesse.
Yeah, that's exactly Jesse. Mm-hmm. And I really like that about the show Lost, is that they did that a lot. The books, the music, everything they showed would have a theme to it,
right?
Pertaining to a character or an episode or something.
Right.
And so it's cool to see that they're doing that here as well.
Right.
So Victor runs in. And he's like, oh my God, Gale's been shot. Yep. Looks like we still need the guys.
Uh-huh.
But he's obviously seen, because he comes right into the door and he's seen by the people there.
Right.
So then he takes off and he goes to look for Jesse and he finds him.
Not hard to find, apparently.
Apparently not. He's in there. His red.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever car that is.
Jesse has basically blue screened or red red ringed of death. He's locked up in his car in his little Celica four-wheel drive.
So then we go back to the lab.
Mm-hmm.
Next scene. Walt and Mike are just staring at each other.
Right.
Like, it is impressive how those guys stare.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you.
They're world champion stares.
Absolutely.
Maybe Gus would win in a three-way contest.
I don't know, man. Walt does not blink. But then Victor comes in with Jesse. He's found him. He brings him back to the lab.
Now, Victor was super emotional in this scene, like knocking over chemicals and stuff, and very angry. Do you think it's because he realized he screwed up because he was supposed to be the guy that kept his eye on them and did all that stuff, and he failed and he got seen? Or was he angry because these guys tweaked his boss? Or
no, I think it was because he knew he screwed up.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think he knew how bad he screwed up.
Right. So then Walt is, or Mike is talking to Victor, and he finds out that Gale's been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked to me like when he first, because he just said he's gone. He's gone like a couple times. And Walt was looking at Jesse like he didn't actually do the deed, I thought, at first.
I didn't pick that up. But
then he says he's dead or whatever. He's killed. And,
and
Walt changes his expression. So Mike calls Gus.
Right.
And I noticed a look on Walt's face when he was talking to Gus. He looked both very, like, worried, of course, about what Gus was going to say, but he also looked like he had a lot of pride in him that he had just pulled off this maneuver.
Yeah.
Like this gambit.
Yeah.
And I thought that mix of the emotions there on his face was really interesting, something I hadn't seen.
And interestingly, we'll talk about this a little at the end of the episode, too. I think at this point, Walt has finally learned to respect and appreciate Jesse as a partner. Someone that's got the stones to do something and not just, like, luck into something. But Jesse's not feeling it the same way about Mr. White. I think Jesse is kind of over that. I think they got interesting places this partnership's going.
Okay. So then we cut to the next scene, and it's Marie coming over to see Skylar to hand her more bills for Hank's treatment.
Apparently astronomical bills, because they shocked Skylar. Like, she kind of staggered when she saw them.
And how long has it been since Marie delivered a bill? Because there were a stack of, like, five of them.
I don't know.
I don't know what happened. Last time it was one, this time it's five. She says they're getting bigger.
Right.
I'm actually wondering if Marie's penchant for stealing is going to factor into this at all. If she's maybe fudging the numbers on Skylar.
That would be
a move.
It seems like they're moving her character away from being unsympathetic and to being very sympathetic. That would be an interesting rope-a-dope they pulled on us. Not like they haven't done it, but
they have done it with that. Yeah. So but she notices Walt's car in the driveway.
Right.
And she's wondering what that's all about. She assumes that Skylar and him are sleeping together again.
Right.
And I noticed that Skylar didn't correct her.
Right.
She never made a point to say, no, that is not happening.
Right, right.
Interesting. Well, I'll talk about that more later.
Okay.
So Marie leaves and Skylar investigates. She's looking around for Walter. She hears Walter Jr. in his room listening to music. And so she decides, you know what? I'm going to go move Walt's car.
Which I didn't get at first, but when I got, like, by the end of the scene that she was doing that to keep Walter Jr. from asking questions.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't, I don't think she really knows in her own head how this is going to shake out.
Sure. Yeah. She's very unsure. But I noticed that they still have the stupid thing in their wheel well with the key. Why? Why would you keep one of those? Who thinks that's a good idea anymore?
I don't know.
That's the first place you check.
It shows how that Walt is still kind of an amateur, I think.
Yeah.
This scene, because at the end of the last season, you're kind of like want to think, oh, wow, Walt's taking the leap, the king drug kingpin now. But after this episode, it knocks him down a couple pegs on the mastermind scale.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was also thinking, as soon as she got into the car and backed out into the street, I was like, oh, she's going to get hit by a car. Every time I see that shot where someone is backing out into an empty street, I'm like, they're going to get hit by a car. Obviously.
Okay.
I don't know. I just think of that.
A little Meet Joe Black there.
Yeah. So Skylar moves the car so Walt Jr. won't see it. Then we go back to the lab, and Walt is trying to convince Mike to let them cook.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, we're here. Let us cook. We're ready to work. We want to go. Nobody else can do this. But Victor actually appears to be quite adept at cooking. He's been observing.
I don't know if he's adept, because he's awful sloppy. And
he's sloppy, yeah, but
I kind of want to talk about now. Do you think Gus really cares about the quality of the meth? Like, would he be fine with 90% pure? Or because everyone makes a big deal, like Walt's like, this has got to run on this operation or he's going to lose all this money. Surely to God this thing's paid for, right? After the first like 10 batches, this thing's got to be just, you know, printing money.
For sure.
So what's the whole point about they got to keep to the schedule? If they miss it, so he's going to be losing money.
Well, now he doesn't have the backing of the Mexican drug cartel.
Oh, right.
Because he killed that dude or had the guy killed. I don't know.
He doesn't have. Not only does he not have the backing, I mean, don't overlook the fact that Gus is not exactly invulnerable. I mean, he's going to have some big people coming after him too. You'd think, right?
Or
do you think there's no way he's completely decapitated the South American cartels, right?
I wouldn't think so, no. So he'll have some issues later.
Right.
But yeah, he's not convinced, and so Victor's cooking. I was wondering at this point what Victor's position was going to be. Was he going to be Gail's assistant, or was he going to be like an insurance policy for Gus if Gail and Walt didn't work out?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was just told to keep his eye on him, but I don't know if that meant, like, record everything they did or anything like that. And again, I just come back to, like, I just can't believe Gus cares about the quality of meth this much because for damn sure the meth heads aren't going to tell.
No, not at all.
So it's like, you can still charge a premium price.
We're making poison for people who don't care.
Yeah, I mean, you can still charge a premium price for this product, even at 90% purity, surely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we need to ask our our podcast brethren over at the Breaking Bad edition.
Yeah, right. So Jesse is still completely unresponsive. He's not said a word.
He is checked out.
Entire time. We go to commercial, we come back, we're in Saul's office. And there is some lunatic trying desperately to get into his office. Was that a homeless guy? What was going on there? Because he looked like he had no money for a lawyer.
The thing is, when you saw the scene of Skyler and Walt sitting in his office before,
sure,
most of those people didn't seem like they had money for a lawyer.
Doesn't have the most upscale clientele.
Well, but on the other hand, like anyone that gets injured, that's his, like, he's an ambulance chaser, right? Among other things.
Sure.
So anyone that gets hurt, he sues the insurance company and keeps like half of whatever he gets for these people. So they don't need money for a lawyer. He's not a $250 an hour upfront kind of guy, retainer kind of guy. So I could see him, you know, maybe he slipped and fell at McDonald's and he wants to cash in. But I love everything about Saul's outfit. I love a security guard and how he sits down. The man looks like he's about to lapse into a meat-based coma.
Yeah, that guy is not long for this world.
Like, I'm like, the other thing is, like, I thought maybe he was, like, eyeing the girl and getting aroused or something, and then she was looking at him, but then I think that she was concerned that he was not going to make it through the next 5 seconds.
Right.
He's having a series of elaborate heart attacks.
One foot in the grave, man. Yeah, he is not healthy. I was wondering what they're waiting for in this office. Are they just there to service Saul, or are they waiting on something? Not so, get out of town.
I know this isn't a family cast, Jim, but come on. Yes, I think that's exactly right. That the security dude is kind of like...
But what about the girl behind the desk?
Well, she's got to answer the phones. They were closed not because it's not normal business operating hours. I think they're closed because Saul's having a paranoid breakdown like, oh my God, you know, is Mike going to find out I screwed him over? Is Gus going to?
Yeah.
Because he was like this. I don't think he knew that Mike had other allegiances until the end of episode or season 3. Because he was like flipping out at the laser tag arcade. He's like, my PI threatened to break my legs. And, you know, like that was a shock to him.
Wait, Mike has other allegiances. What are you talking
to
about?
To Gus.
Like, okay. Yeah.
And I think Saul thought he was his guy.
Yeah.
And no.
Exclusively.
No.
Yeah, right.
So.
So Saul, yeah, like you said, Saul's scanning for bugs in his office. He's moved the pillars away from the wall, the styrofoam pillars.
Yeah, right.
His office is so gaudy. I love it.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing.
I love everything. Like I said, I love everything about Saul.
Yeah.
I love his people. I love his office. I love the way he conducts himself. I love the way he dealt with Skyler on the phone. Aren't you a chatty Cathy when she mentions the meth?
Yeah. So Skyler calls and she can't find Walt and he goes to a payphone. He doesn't trust his office
Shades
phone.
Of the wire.
Sure, yeah. Which I thought was interesting. Uh-huh. But then he talks to her for a minute and says, hey, I know where Walt is.
Right.
Don't worry.
Lying.
Lies to Skyler, yeah. But then he asks his bodyguard if he has a passport.
Which I hope he does not flee the country. This
yeah, I don't want
awesome.
Him to take himself out of the story. Now, no. If he fled the country and did, like, some sort of, like, video conferencing defense of Walt at some point, or, like, I could see that being kind of funny and interesting, but I don't want him to remove himself from this story.
Right.
Because he's got too much potential as a character.
Yeah, and I still want to see him, like, in my predictions, if nothing else, so my prediction comes true, I want to see him do some badass, like, lawyer jiu-jitsu. Justify, you know, the faith that Walt has placed into him.
Yeah, and the 10% or 17% or whatever.
Plus, he's got Mike works for him, even on a moonlighting basis. And Mike doesn't work with complete fucking idiots, right?
Sure. Like, and I don't think Saul is.
No, I don't. I think a lot of this is an act.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Just like the act he gave to Mike.
Right.
When Mike came to try to get the address.
Right.
So, yeah, he seems very afraid that they now know something about him. So, Skyler... We go back to Skyler. She's going to Walt's apartment.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed that her search for Walt felt like it went on really long. Felt like they showed her checking everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if some of this isn't going to come back later in the story. Like, surely the eyeball, when we get to it. That has to be some sort of sign, right?
Well, someone mentioned, I saw, it might have been the Mayer's woman, the Melissa Mayer's from Entertainment Weekly, but she mentioned that there's like a lot of appearances of that eyeball throughout the series, mm-hmm. and that have some sort of symbolism that a character is being watched, or the eyes on them. And I just wonder if that's, you know, now that Skylar's involved herself in a criminal enterprise, the eyeball is watching her now too.
I wonder. Because the other time I saw it is when the cousins picked it up.
Yep.
And they were outside watching Walt. They were mm-hmm. or they were waiting for him to come out of the shower. I wonder if somebody doesn't have Walt's apartment bugged.
Hmm.
Like an ICU sort of thing. Because I think
Walt's carrying that around.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is at that moment when she looks at it,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if someone doesn't see her.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because at that point, I guess when he brought it home, his house was bugged. Because, you know, Mike bugged all that stuff, right?
Yeah, but didn't he take that out?
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess at that time it was bugged, yeah, because that's how he knew.
I don't know. I bet there's like 10 listeners right now, like, waiting to correct. Yeah, waiting to correct this.
All right.
Feel free.
Yeah, send us some feedback. So anyway, she basically guilts this locksmith. I had a real problem with what she was doing in this.
Well, I have a real problem too, but I think it's despicable, but
exactly. Like, but I could not believe she was leveraging her miserable crying baby to try to get into this house.
Dude, I think she's Walt. She's just a couple steps behind him. Like I said, I wrote my recap.
Yeah, I know, but I don't like the way she does it as much as I like what Walt's doing, you know?
I don't know. She's very skillful at it. I think she might even be a more skilled manipulator than Walt. Because Walt would tell bald-faced lies and do things like they needed to cover it with the fugue state, and he just got more and more outrageous, where Skylar just is good.
Something has to give there, right? Like, you think this locksmith is going to come back and...
No, God, no.
Later
we've never
on?
Seen,
no?
I don't think we'll ever see a locksmith again.
Hmm.
He wants to... Because the thing is... He did something wrong, too.
Sure.
So I think that's where, I think when he closed the door, we're never seeing that
left.
Again. Yep. That's my prediction. Should I put it on the board?
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Are you going to predict? Okay.
No, that's too easy. Some random character. We'll never see them again.
The guy who dabs his fries in ketchup and Denny's will never be seen in another episode.
Okay, so then we go to the next scene. Marie is arriving home at her place.
Oh, God, this was brutal.
A gut-wrenching scene.
Ugly.
And she's having a very, very hard time dealing with Hank. Not dealing with him, but being able to support Hank through his trauma.
Who wouldn't? I mean, Hank is like...
Yeah.
A lot... The word shell of a man is kind of cliche, but mm-hmm. Hank is literally a shell of the man. When we first see his face, he's almost unrecognizable. He looks like he's heavier. His, face is all drawn and he's not shaven. He's collecting rocks.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know. I don't know if that was hinted in that he had this kind of fascination with crystal. I think it's kind of interesting that it's crystal.
Sure.
I don't know if it's just that or if there was some other, he was a rock hound from before. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's amazing how quickly they made Marie from one of the, Marie and Skylar ran neck and neck for biggest, show bitch.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time. Most unsympathetic character, least interesting character. And now they're really... flipping that on us and making them both very interesting. And again, I felt sorry for her when she's sitting in their car, like psyching herself up and summoning the will to be cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
I just like really felt sorry for her. And now she's having to, change Hank's bedpan with the number two, with the deuce.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm wondering how that's going to play out because I could see that going really dark places.
Oh, sure. Well, like the previews for next week kind of hint that, which we'll talk about later.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that, but yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So she goes in and asks Hank about his physical therapy. He is not happy with the progress he's been making. Everybody says he's bidding on minerals on eBay. It's not eBay, people. It's mineralemporium.com.
Yeah, but I saw that as like a vendor,
right?
Skin of eBay or something, right? But the other thing is, what's there not to be happy about? An extra half step and this much less shit in her pants? I mean, that's huge progress.
If I had that much more shit in my pants, I'd be extremely unhappy.
Yeah, so that much less is something to be proud of.
Right? So yeah, I'm wondering where the rocks are going, or the minerals, I'm sorry.
You ain't got the minerals, governor.
So then we go to commercial, we come back, and Victor is still cooking in the meth lab.
Mm-hmm.
I have the distinct feeling that this meth will not be as good as Walt's, because he doesn't look like he's taking much care, like you said. He's sloppily pouring chemicals.
I have a distinct feeling that that meth is going to be ruined, because I don't...
think they kept cooking while they were disposing of his body?
I don't know, maybe.
They probably had to keep on schedule,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. The man said get back to work.
He did.
I would get back to work if the man said that to me.
Especially if he has a box cutter.
I'd get that on a screensaver at work to motivate me, you know? Every time before I open up Google Chrome, get back to work.
I'm going
to
make that the alarm on my phone. Get back to work.
Well, yes, terrifying.
Yeah. So I noticed that Mike was drinking the remnants of Gail's coffee.
Mm.
Like, he pours himself a glass of Dead Man's Brew.
Which, and, even days after, I bet it's still a pretty good cup of Joe.
Probably still pretty good, but it's running low. I'm wondering what Walt's going to do once it's all gone, you know?
He may
flip out.
Or he might just start brewing the coffee as a way to kind of... Because Walt does weird ritual things. Like, remember with the Crazy Eight who wanted the crust cut off of the bread?
Yeah.
And then he started cutting off his crust, too. And I wonder if now he'll start being passionate about coffee. Because it's like, you know, as he kills people, he takes on their bits of their personality. It's kind of psychotic, really.
Well, when he moves to Colombia to become a drug lord, he'll have to like coffee. So he's getting warmed up. So Walt is trying to
That's
converse.
The funny thing is, I bet they could take Gail's coffee invention and just destroy Starbucks.
Right?
I mean, you know, charging $6 a cup of coffee, that's got to, you know, there's big, much wider...
He'd still be selling drugs.
Much wider array of the populace is addicted to coffee than the meth.
Oh,
I think you could take Gail's coffee recipe and go with that.
Maybe so. Maybe that's episode 2.
That'd be season 6.
Season 6.
Jesse the Coffee Man.
Wow. So Walt's trying to make conversation with Jesse at this point. Jesse's not having any of it. He's still completely silent, hasn't said a word. And they're talking about how bad Victor's doing. He's saying, oh, he's going to forget the aluminum.
Yes,
I bet he's going to forget the aluminum.
Yeah, you stupid bastard. You have no clue what you're doing. God, Walt is such an idiot sometimes.
Yeah, right. Because, of course, Victor remembers the aluminum, and he's like, oh, son of a bitch.
Right.
But Gus finally shows up, and he is pissed.
And have we ever seen him look that good? Like, every single time I've seen him, he's dressed nice sometimes, but like manager of a chicken store nice.
Right.
He was wearing a $1,000 suit and looked fantastic.
Maybe the only other time I've seen him in a suit even is when he went to the police station and donated to Hank's thing.
I still think he was looking Chicken Man in that. I mean, this guy looked like...
Did he have the hat? Did he have the visor?
This guy looked like Lex Luthor in a big-budget production of Superman.
Yeah,
or Magneto. Yeah. Or some other supervillain. Or a vampire from some Blade series. I mean, he was he looked like $1 million.
Absolutely.
He looked like an $8 million hole in the ground.
But he did not feel like $1 million. That
no,
is for sure.
He
was
did not.
Angry.
No.
So throughout this entire scene, we get no words from Jesse.
Mm-mm.
We get 5 words from Gus.
Exactly 5 words.
Exactly 5 words from Gus. And as it plays out, like, I noticed just how much they were saying without words. I almost felt like Walt was... like, Walt's commentary was unwanted in the scene. Like, I didn't want to see it. It said a lot of valuable things about what Walt was thinking at the time.
Yes, the whole time you're saying, shut up, Walt. Shut up, Walt.
Yeah.
Your position would be vastly improved if you just shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and I almost felt like my enjoyment of the scene, like, it could have been a little more powerful if nobody had said anything.
I like the fact that it was uncomfortable that way.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing is, the scene was 10, I clocked it, 10 minutes from the time Gus stepped in the door to the time he stepped out the door. 10 minutes. If there was no dialogue,
scene.
That would be an interesting experience or experimental TV.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just made, again, they're knocking Walt down a couple pegs. They really raised him up in season 3, and they're knocking him down a couple pegs, showing him how much he still had to go. But he was terrified.
Yeah. Oh, he was absolutely terrified. He's trying to justify his actions to Gus.
Right.
He's saying, basically, what did you expect me to do, roll over and let you murder us?
Gail's death's on you.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, like I liked your take last night on your instant take that mm-hmm. Walt is still incapable of taking responsibility for anything.
Yeah. I mean, his own actions.
This reminded me of his long rambling rant in the school gymnasium about how no one's really to blame. If you want to blame anyone, blame the government. Except for, you know, if he had a box cutter held to his neck, that would be that rant. But the chemistry interrogation he put Victor through is pathetic. Like, anyone understood what the fuck he was talking about.
Yeah, no one would ever understand that. But he didn't have to, like he pointed out. It's a short order cook situation.
Right.
But I did notice that when he was talking about that, he mentioned the chiral centers or something. And I was wondering if that was maybe sort of a comparison, because you remember back in the early part of the series where he was explaining what chirals are, mm-hmm, right? Like,
The opposites.
You change one tiny little piece of a chemical and it becomes something entirely different.
Right.
I was wondering if that isn't sort of an analogy with him and Gus, because there's, I feel like they're very, very similar, except for in one regard, and I think that's Walter's pride.
Mm. Oh, I don't know. Chicken Man's awful proud. I just don't think Walt is prepared to do anything, like, and he's not as cold yet, because it's like, you know, he sees a man stuck like a pig and he almost throws up, whereas Gus is just boring holes through the man's eyes, man.
Yeah.
And I, what did you think was going to happen in this scene? Because I was actually shocked when he slit Victor's throat. Not only was it shocking itself, I was...
Yeah.
I thought what was going to happen is he was going to cut up Walt and Jesse a little bit. Not anything that would, like, you know, disable them, but, like, carve some kind of warning in their chest or just, like, you know... again, with a box cutter, you can do some pretty horrific damage. It's not life-threatening.
Sure, yeah.
And I thought that was, we're going to see like a torture scene and probably of Jesse, that he was going to torture Jesse in front of Walt. But when he grabbed Victor and slashed his throat, my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah.
Just how vicious it was, how sudden it was, how cold Gus was doing it. I mean, it's just like he was slaughtering a chicken.
I honestly didn't know. I knew that they weren't going to kill any of the main characters.
Obviously.
That's the one line this show has not crossed, right? They've not killed any main characters yet.
No. The biggest main character would be it wasn't Badger, it wasn't...
Combo. Yeah. They killed him. But he wasn't a really main character.
Oh,
he was a side character.
Oh, no.
So,
Gale now.
right. Both side characters. So they haven't done that. So I was sure they weren't going to kill any one of them.
Gilligan's no George R. Martin, for sure.
Right. So I honestly wasn't sure what was going to happen, but in retrospect, it makes sense. The lowest ranking guy in the room, the least important guy. Somebody has to die in this situation, so it's him.
Right.
I did notice that Mike was genuinely shocked.
Oh, yeah.
When this happened. Like, he did not expect this from Gus at all.
When he slit his throat, that's what I noticed on the second viewing, is he actually drew his gun and pointed at Gus like... He was just like, I don't know what to do, but my instinct is this is a crazy man. I'm putting the gun on him.
Yeah, right.
Like, he just, that I think shocked his professionalism.
Yeah.
Because I think he knew Victor screwed up, but I don't think that Mike sees eye to eye in, because I don't know what kind of relationship Victor and him had, but it had to be some sort of professional, like, you know, collegiate, you know, I don't think they're best buddies or anything, but that had to, well, I mean, what do you think? He's thinking, if he did that to Victor,
what's stopping him from doing that to me?
Exactly.
Like, the next time I screw up, that's going to be me on the floor.
Right. And how minor does my screw up have to be?
Yeah. He's reevaluating everything he knows about Gus in that moment.
Yes. Yes.
And it shows on his face. I really thought that everybody shone in that scene, Mike included. And Mike, I think, could have gotten overlooked, but the way he played that reaction to Gus just put him right up there with everyone else, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. All the actors. Man, and who knew? I don't know what this guy's name is. I forget it already. God dang it. What is this guy's? Giancarlo Esposito?
Yeah, yeah.
That guy, who knew that he had this in him?
Right.
And I don't know. I wonder, because Vince Gilligan said he was pretty sure that he would be able to do everything he asked and more, because basically the script is like Gus gets, you know, Gus gets undressed. Gus gets dressed. Gus kills the guy. Gus gets undressed and dressed again. And then, like, a list of what people were thinking in their heads. But that was basically the whole scene.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So it's amazing that he could carry that and make taking his glasses off and taking his tie off and hanging up clothes so freaking menacing.
Yeah, yeah. And twice. Twice he gets dressed in that scene, dressed or undressed.
And we absolutely cannot take our eyes off
of it. Riveted, yeah. We've never seen Gus get his hands dirty either. This is the first time he's ever done anything that would relate him to a crime.
And he's formidable. I mean, when you take his shirt off, he's solid.
He's a big dude. He works out for sure.
Yep.
But yeah, he's a dangerous guy now. Mm-hmm. We know that.
Yep.
And everyone in that room knows that now.
So the scene lasts 10 minutes. We've been talking about it at least that long. The one thing I want to talk about, because they switch scenes, unless you had something else.
No.
They switch scenes. I want to talk about how artful this show uses blood and gore. I mean, the two close-ups with the music playing, of that like ambient industrial music playing of the rivulets of blood running into the gutters, and like when they shove Victor, because that's what happens next, the cleanup phase, which is going to involve our old friend, hydrofluoric acid, and a presumably hydrofluoric acid safe tub that they're going to stuff Victor into and then dissolve him.
Yeah.
And when they, like, when Jesse, like, lifts up that thing so Walt can clean it, and the light shining through, and you can almost see, like, a spinal column. And like, just use your imagination on that bucket. It's really disturbing.
It's extremely disturbing.
And I think that can you imagine that the practical effects guys must have had a ball with the gore and the blood and making it do all those crazy things?
Absolutely. I'm sure they did.
And I love the I think Walt and Jesse as a criminal duo, I think Mike is very impressed with them at this point, because this is like, that body disposal method is almost foolproof.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's kind of like skeptical, like, I don't know. And like Jesse's like, trust us.
Yeah. You know, this will work.
This is going to do the job. And I think that was a very impressive to him. Not the fact that they used Gail as leverage and they're willing to do that. And the fact that they had this ingenious way I think he's seen they're not a bunch of idiots, don't know their ass from a hole in the ground when it comes to crime.
Yeah.
A little amateur still.
And this plays into my prediction that Mike's flipping the tables on Gus, man.
I think that prediction is a lock at this point.
You think? I do too.
I think that's the way out. Yeah.
Another thing that I noticed when they were cleaning up is that Mike definitely at this point almost feels sympathetic for Walt.
Right.
Because when they're trying to stuff Victor into that barrel,
right,
they're like having a hard time and they can't get him up off the floor, and Mike goes over, he's like, I shouldn't be doing this, but okay, I'm gonna help you out.
See, I so he saw walks that over he and was just pulls it up. He's just kind of disgusted at that point.
I had a very different read on that.
Just the way when you see him, you know, pick up the barrel and just walk past it, and kind of like his body language is just like, you know. Yeah, that's why I read it anyway.
Okay.
I also love the sound design, because they play that industrial, like, ambient, you know, creepy kind of music, and then they also mix in like squeaky wheels and hydraulic sounds lifting.
Uh-huh.
And it's like one, I mean, the sound design in this, you know, super lab scene, murder scene, was amazing. Loved it.
Hmm. Okay. I didn't really notice it when I was watching, but I'll have to go check it out. So then they're in the Denny's, right?
Uh-huh.
Or whatever diner that is.
Which, that was artful too. They go from the swishing, swirling blood to the swirling ketchup.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty awesome transition. But Jesse, at this point, I think he's off the deep end, or he's just resigned, I think,
to the
situation he's in.
When they showed Victor being killed, Walt almost threw up in his mouth,
yeah,
and Jesse looked like he went from blue screen to, like, his jaw was set. There was hatred, like, anger. I think he's going to scary places this season.
Yeah, I think he could be on another round of downward spiral.
Oh, yeah. I think that's definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, in contrast to Walt, who couldn't eat, he's, like, scarfing down his Grand Slam. He's making these darkly humorous, you know, like, kind of, you know, oh, I bet Gus had to look a long time for Gail and bring him along. He's like, bet he regrets that now.
Yeah, right.
But the thing that really struck me about the scene is Jesse saying that, well, at least we're on the same page now.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt's like, what page is that? Because Walt is afraid to say, hey, we bought us some time, that's it. And Jesse's like, no way.
Yeah.
We're made. Because obviously this guy cares about the quality. We're the ones with the quality. You can't just go to monster.com, career builder, whatever, yeah. find us.
Sure.
But he says, we're on the same page. And Walt's like, what do you mean? He's like, if I can't kill you, I'm going to sure as hell make you wish you were dead.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Man, to be honest, I'm not sure.
This I don't know either.
I really want somebody to write in and tell me, because I honestly am not sure.
Like, unless Gus kept them as slaves in that dungeon, which he didn't, right? Because they let him out, which is
kind of
amazing.
And I'm wondering why they did that, yeah.
Yeah.
Why he didn't at least have someone with them or tailing them or something.
Yeah. I just don't know how that's going to play out. We're on the same page.
Yeah. Well, they all know that they all want to kill each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, everyone is gunning for everyone.
Yes.
And anybody slips up, they're dead.
Right. Like, Walt's going to have a hard time killing Gus because Gus is extremely careful. Mm-hmm. Gus has a hard time killing Walt because he needs him to make the meth.
Yeah.
Jesse, I don't
can't
know.
Can't be killed by Gus because Walt won't cook if he's killed. Exactly. As he said.
Although I wonder if that's actually true, and I wonder if the Chicken Man wonders if that's true, too.
He probably does.
Because,
he probably does.
You know, if like, they can blow Jesse away, and Gus says, you know, you don't cook, I'm killing Skyler, and I'm killing
right?
Holly, and I'm killing
Walt
Jr.,
yeah.
and I'm going to kill Hank, and I'm going to kill... I mean, he could, like, wipe out his whole family.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I would cook.
Right? And Walt would be insane not to cook at that point.
Yeah.
So I don't think Jesse is untouchable by any means.
Right, right.
So I'm actually not sure why he wasn't just killed in the lab.
Yeah, I don't know that Gus knows that about Walt, though. I don't know that Gus doesn't know that the family's so important to him.
Hmm, that's possible. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Okay, so I think that's... Well, no, we've got one more scene at the end where Walt goes to pick up his car. He's wearing the Kenny Rogers shirt.
Which, oh, that's right, yeah. Man, because we hatched up this plan that we want to cosplay as... Jesse and Walt, you in full-blown yo bitch Jesse mode, me in full-blown Heisenberg, and we're gonna get some Blue Rock candy, and we're gonna hand this stuff out in little bitty baggies at like some kind of like Comic Con or Gen Con or PAX. I gotta say, that was when I saw the white jeans, Kenny Rogers, red Chuck Taylors. Yeah. I'm like, oh,
I want,
like I said in my recap, I want to get a flash mob of that organized somewhere at some convention.
Yeah, that'd
like,
be awesome.
How awesome would that be, everybody wearing that outfit?
That'd be pretty sweet.
And I started a store so you can get those t-shirts. And then it's just a pair of baggy jeans and red Chuck, you know, Converses.
I'm ready. Let's go.
I love that.
But yeah, Walt goes to pick up his car. Skyler meets him outside. And what do they talk about? I can't actually remember.
He says, you know, like, where's my car? She's like, well, Walt Jr. is going to wake up, and I didn't want to raise too many questions. And he's like... raised eyebrows, that was smart. And then she's like, are you okay? And he's like, right as rain. And then he walks off. And there's a lot of tension in that scene, but not the angry, sullen kind of I hate you tension that we saw in previous episodes.
Yeah.
There is, I mean, not quite sexual either. But I think they want to reconcile. Like, at that time, they wanted to just hug each other.
Yeah.
But they weren't, neither one of them was going to take the first step.
Yeah. And this goes all the way back to the beginning where Marie saw the car in the driveway and she didn't say anything.
Right.
She didn't correct her.
Right.
The only thing she's keeping, the only person she's keeping from thinking that is Walt Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why that is yet.
Because I don't think she knows for sure. And
she doesn't, yeah.
Walt's not going to push her and she's not sure, but I think... you know, this is going to break one way or another. Right now, it's like she's standing at the edge of the cliff and she hasn't made the full plunge. But if she reconciles with him, she knows that that means she's breaking bad too.
Well, and vice versa. If she breaks bad, she probably has to reconcile with him because who else is she going to find at that point?
Yeah, right.
Like if Walt, on his spree, had tried to go out and find someone and bring them into the fold, it probably wouldn't have worked.
Right. And I don't think she ever stopped loving Walt.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, she's still angry. She's still hurt about all the lying, but she's starting to see the necessity as she gets involved that, like, and he was trying to protect him and doing the best, and Walt obviously still loves his family. So there is a lot of interesting things going on there, and it'll be interesting to see how they take this relationship and you know, because they drove a wedge through it, season 1 and 2, culminating in 3, and now are they going to knit it back together? And in what form is it going to be? Just partners?
I'd like to see.
Is it going
to
be like
how they do this?
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing that part of it.
So last scene that we opened with the podcast was the crime scene with the fantastic song. I can't even remember what that song was.
I don't know.
But the ends, the series, the scene fades to black on the lab notes.
Yes, the same lab notes.
What the hell is in those lab notes? Are there names? Are there recipes?
Wow.
Are they going to even think to go through that? I mean, they're definitely going to. It's a crime scene, for God's sake.
They've got to, right?
I mean, are we going to see that in, like, transferred in evidence bags? And, like, we're going to see more of that. This is going to be the teddy bear eye or whatever for season four. That's my prediction.
Okay.
I call it. You can't have it.
State your prediction in recordable terms.
We're going to see that lab notes book in every episode of this season.
Every episode?
Yes. It's going to be the Damocles or whatever sword hanging over the whole series.
Wow. That's a big prediction. Okay.
On the board.
I've got you on the board.
On the board. Mark it.
I think it's eventually going to make its way into Hank's hands at some point.
Yeah. But that's a ways away.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, he's still got a long journey ahead.
I can see his
him.
Partner next episode, honestly, saying, hey, we got this drug-related, you know,
and snapping him out of his thing. Back on the Heisenberg trail.
Yeah. And following it from home and the internet and doing all that kind of stuff. So.
So that's it for the recap. That was the last scene.
Yep.
We're pretty far in here. Do we want to do some... Because I have a lot of questions that I want to ask you about.
Go for it.
About the series in general and this episode.
Interrogate me.
So I've read...
Put the box cutter down, for God's sake. You don't need to do that.
Just
let me answer the questions.
I just want to ask, did they see you? Did anyone see you?
just a bunch of looky-loos.
So I've been reading where people have said that it was strongly implied in the opening scene that Gale was a meth user.
Oh.
And I didn't pick up on that at all.
No way. He was obviously a marijuana user.
No, not necessarily.
Dude,
flavored tobacco in that hookah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I guarantee it. With the way Gale was. He's brewing tea. He's singing Italian songs.
Whatever. I bet he's partaken.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Well,
fact that he's a meth addict. In fact, when he made great pains to say that this is excellent. But he's like, I mean, the purity. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever tried it.
I don't think so either.
Hell no. I know. The strong implied he's a meth user. What was their evidence?
I think he's honestly one of the purest characters on the show.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I wonder how he got into that. Did they explain that in season three? They might have.
I don't think so.
Okay. I need to go back and... I didn't make it as far as through season three, so I need to see if they talked about his motivations, because it's hard to find somebody like that. I mean, he's very intelligent, almost a Renaissance man, and he's cooking meth for the chicken man. How the hell did that happen?
I don't know.
He's in Los Palos one day, and...
so I see you like that hamburger.
That's right.
Want to cook meth?
Yeah. I don't know.
So you totally disagree with that?
I disagreed that.
I did too.
What evidence? What strong implication? Did they mention anything? Because that's actually shocking to me.
I can't remember exactly what they mentioned, but
listeners,
they said it was strongly.
Listeners, if this thing is on and you feel this way, please send us. I don't care about the rest of people. Send us mail and forget the iTunes reviews. I got to have you justify that because I don't get that at all.
All right.
Enlighten me.
My other questions to you, well, two of my other questions are, has Walter crossed the line for you yet into bad guy territory? And if so, when?
Yes, but like Chuck Klosterman said, I find it very impossible not to continue to justify his bad behavior.
So I would say he has not crossed the line for you.
No, he's definitely crossed the line.
No, you don't hate him yet.
No, I don't hate him. So when am I going to hate him?
Yeah, when is he going to turn into the Marie or Skyler of the first two seasons?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how he can break, because it's basically Vince Gilligan trying to break the audience,
right?
And I wonder if the show will still be watchable if you don't like the main hero.
I don't know.
They'll have to shift the protagonist. Will have to be something like Hank, right?
Or
someone
Jesse,
we still
maybe
we identify with and want to see succeed. Because you can't just have a show about an irredeemably unlikable asshole.
Yeah,
it's a murderous asshole. Yeah. You can't. Like, you couldn't have a show starring Tuco.
Although it would be somewhat entertaining from a voyeur perspective.
I wonder if they'll ever
get me to cross that line, because I still like him.
Did you see the interview on Grantland with Vince Gilligan where he gave his personal opinion?
No.
Where Walt became the villain was when his pride didn't allow him to accept the free money for his cancer treatments, and he decided to cook meth anyway. He didn't have... Because I've always said he had to cook meth. But he didn't have to cook meth, because his partners, partners came and said, we'll pay for it, we'll give you a job, we'll take care of you and your family.
Yeah.
So him cooking meth was all about his pride, him not wanting the salvation to come out of his son's webpage, because he wanted his family to know that he did this. I mean, that's insane. And that's, I think he's got a point there, but he still hasn't crossed the line for me. Because like you said, that's the proof is in the pudding. If you like the man, he hasn't crossed the line yet.
Exactly. And I don't hate him.
So
I'm interested also in what you think you would do in Walt's situation, because at this point he has to try to take Gus out, right?
But I would say that's what he thinks he has to do, yeah.
Okay, but if he does that, there goes his entire setup. Like he's not selling these drugs that he's cooking. They can't do that. They've proven that they can't run the operation. They've tried it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So how does he replace Gus's distribution network if he takes Gus out?
I mean, I got some theories, like that he's going to try to somehow, this war that's going to break out between Gus and the Mexican cartel is going to weaken them both enough that he can step in and be the supplier. No, not just a producer, but the supplier, that he's going to learn enough from Gus. Because
he's going to have to meet
that,
people, though.
I still think that maybe once Gus calms down, that he might see Walt now as a professional, as a potential protege. Or maybe...
It's possible.
Maybe Walt... Because I saw another interesting theory that, you know, at the beginning, or in season three, they had that weird Mexican musical interlude about the cousins coming.
Yeah.
That they actually showed a dead Walt body at the end of that.
What?
Yeah, I don't remember that either. I need to watch that. But they said they showed a dead Walt body at the end of that. And someone said, like, you could see that as just, okay, that's just, you know, symbolism. Mm-hmm. Or someone said, I wonder if they get, like, a dead, they get a body and doll it up to look like Heisenberg and drop him in the desert for the Mexican cartel to find so they think he's dead.
Or maybe that's the end of the series when he's actually dead.
good point there, too.
That's interesting. I'll have to check that out. Another thing I was wondering about is how would you feel if Hank was not the one to find out about Walt? If he never caught him? Because that's what we expect to happen, right? Hank's on his trail. We expect Hank to catch him.
I don't think that's in the cards. I think Hank will be somehow involved with his capture. Myself.
Yeah, I do too. But would that ruin the series for you, you think?
No. I mean, just if it look, I don't think they can go wrong if they keep doing it as well as they're doing it.
Yeah.
Because like the cousins didn't ruin it for me, the plane crash didn't ruin it for me, because I have to, you know, everything was well done. Mm. So, and I don't think someone besides Hank catching him is as big a stretch as that. In fact, it'd be kind of interesting if Walt killed Hank. Like, that's how bad... I mean, that would probably be a crossover for me. I couldn't root for Walt at that point. And then Hank's, you know, Latino partner brings him in.
That would be Jesse's, interesting.
I mean, so...
Gomez?
Yeah.
Gomi?
Right, right. So, I mean, there's... Who knows? But I have complete... At this point, you know, Vince Gilligan has earned my complete trust to guide this through whatever, wherever it's going.
Yeah. All right, let's go into some real quick listener feedback. We don't have a whole lot. We got an email from Jerry who says he thinks, this is a prediction, by the end of the show, Walt will kill Hank. So he is right on target with what you think there.
Yep, that would definitely cross the line. Gilligan's saying that's what's going to happen, that at the end of the season, or at end of the series, no one will be left rooting for Walt.
He's
going to break us.
Yeah, it's going to be... I don't know what it's going to take, but it's going to be interesting. We got two reviews on iTunes that I mentioned earlier. Elbex Taro says, this is great. Finally a Breaking Bad podcast. I hate to ruin the party, but there's actually another Breaking Bad podcast that we talked about at the beginning.
Right.
So
check them out, too.
Check them out. Anyone who loves the show, this amazing show, will definitely enjoy listening to this podcast. Thanks, Elbex Taro. And Michael Van says, excellent production value with cool hosts. I like to think I'm cool.
I actually like the compliment of our production values, because we've worked really hard to get this set up and sound good.
We have an $8 million hole in the ground where we cast.
Yes, our podcasts are 99. Oh my God, pure. And we're proud of that number.
Absolutely.
That number was hard work to get.
And then he says, looking forward to watching season 4 with these guys.
Sweet.
Thanks.
Hope we haven't dropped the ball. Yeah. Our actual recap, your preview is pretty good. Actual recap, not so much. Pretty terrible.
So that's it. The next show is going to be titled 38 Snub.
That's interesting. Represents the 38 snubs they got from the Emmys this year, since they're like, you know, what's this?
Not
been on 13 months, not eligible bullshit.
Yep. So that's it for the show.
We're going to do spoilers afterwards?
We're going to do spoilers after the music. Thanks for joining us if you're tuning out.
You can get, follow us. You're going to have to...
Facebook.com and
I put
search.
The link to like us at the end of every one of our podcast posts. So that's the best way to find us until we get 25 of y'all to like us. Then we can have a nice little Facebook.com/breakgood. And won't that be nice?
I'm doing Twitter all day, every day, practically. Yeah. Twitter.com/breakgood.
He's working that like a rented mule.
Could have been worse. That analogy could have been way worse.
Yeah, I saw in your eyes. They kind of widened. You looked like a Walt right before I Gus slit Victor's neck there.
It looked like Jesse staring at Walt. Or staring at Gus,
right? Yeah, right.
Where else can they find us? They can email us, breakinggood@baldmove.com.
Forums.baldmove.com.
Yeah,
and breaking
no there.
Yeah. Yeah, get on the forums, people. It's nice.
Yeah.
Breakinggood.baldmove.com. I every day got your breaking bad news.
Yes.
Jim's got a lockdown on Twitter. Hope
posting,
you guys enjoy
it. Insightful articles and all sorts of stuff over there. So that's it for the non-spoilery section. Join us after the break. With that said, until next time, I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron. Let's put our clothes back on.
Okay, and we're back.
We're back.
That transition is so weird when we don't have the music.
I know. Should we go ahead and play the preview for 38 Snub?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, here we go. I'm going to try to bring the levels back up.
Next episode of AMC's Breaking Bad.
I want you to understand, I didn't want any of this to happen.
There's just one thing you and me got to talk about. That's this.
You're so strong today.
All right, you know. It's quiet. You know what this place needs?
Get me in a room with him, and I'll do the rest.
For a longer look at the next episode of Breaking Bad, go to AMCTV.com.
That longer look that they talked about is basically makes it clear that Jesse is going on a bender.
Yeah.
Like a giant cocaine bender. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that we kind of think I had an on-air dispute about was I thought Hank told Marie to get out at that scene.
Yeah, he did just then, right?
Okay, right. So what did we have an argument about? I thought you said that didn't happen. Or was it something with Jesse?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. I have no recollection of the conversation.
All right, so let's talk about this point by point.
Yeah, let's.
The first scene... Walt is finally transforming back into Heisenberg.
And he's saying, I didn't want any of this to happen.
And he's talking, it looks like, from the back of the guy's head that he's talking to Mike at a bar. And then we have the scene with Jesse's, not girlfriend, but almost kind of girlfriend that he met at the support group. And she's asking him about this brick of money. We see Hank struggling with physical therapy, telling Marie to get out, which that'll be interesting. And then again, Jesse's life of excess. And Walt requests an audience with apparently Gus. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's no way Gus gets shot
or next
gets
episode.
Taken out next episode, mm-hmm. No effing way.
I can't see it. That has to play out for at least a few more episodes.
Well, plus if we're going to talk spoilers, that interview I talked about with Giancarlo.
Yeah.
What does he exactly say in that interview?
He says something about a very big showdown. It's going to be. Basically who can outsmart the other person, and that Giancarlo Gus is going to be very surprised by.
Oh, is it Giancarlo?
It's Giancarlo, I think.
Okay.
But he says,
well, you're Spanish. You're the one supposed to know.
I'm not what are you talking
Portuguese?
About? Spanish?
Korean?
Italian.
I think you're Korean.
Yes, I'm Korean. but no, he says that Gus has the upper hand still. He's smarter than Walt.
Right.
He's more experienced than Walt, but that Walt will have to pull one over on him if he wants to try to take him out.
I thought it was interesting. He said it's a proving moment for Gus because we've never seen Gus do something so formidable. This is the final chance that Walt is giving, or Gus is giving Walt to step up. He's giving him a warning. He's saying, do it my way and you'll be all right. It's a moment where Walt could step up and really embrace a part of him that's Heisenberg. But he says that's not going to happen. See, that's what I thought. I think Gus still has the door open for him to be a protege, but Walt is going to try to go on the offensive. So,
which is what we all want to see, right?
Yep.
None of us want to see him continue to cook for Gus.
Yep. And Esposito says you'll have to see Walt get very, very tricky to even get in Gus's presence.
Yeah.
So interesting.
So it's
and he's also says that Gus also still has his eye on Jesse. Still's gunning for him. So you got any new predictions other than the one that I put on the board? Or
yeah, I have.
Still got some spoilers to dish.
I have a couple of predictions. No, I was just I wanted to talk about the money, kind of speculate on what that brick of money is. Did she find it because he's slinging drugs again? Did she, like, what's the significance of that?
I don't know.
Have we seen it before?
Maybe he tried. See, that's the thing. I wish I'd seen season three all the way through again.
Yeah.
Because I kind of almost think that he left that at her the last time I saw her. Again, there's like 30 listeners saying, no, you stupid sons of that just watched it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I'd have to see. I have no theory about what that the significance of that money.
Okay, dead end.
Yep.
So predictions. I have a couple predictions. I'm not going to go with my first one because that's kind of generic and lame.
That's our show, generic and lame. My God, our podcast is called Breaking Good. How much more generic and lame can you get?
One of the non-generic and lame ones is that Saul's bodyguard that we saw before,
the
very heavy set dude,
meat coma.
Yeah, meat coma man is totally a goner before the end of the series. Or I predict that his fatness will keep him from helping Saul in some way.
Huh?
That his weight will become an issue. His health will be at issue in this show.
I just know that when you've eaten so much meat that your sinuses are packed with hamburger.
This man could eat corn.
No, he eats nothing but meat. He lives on an all-meat diet. He, like, is Atkins to the core, and his sinuses are...
Shouldn't he be thin?
That's why he couldn't breathe. His sinuses are packed full of ground beef. The man can't act as a bodyguard in that condition.
No way. No. He's intimidating to look at, but he couldn't run a foot if he had to.
I don't think he's intimidating to look at.
It's hard to get past him to get to Saul.
Oh, I get. Yeah, if he stood in my doorway, I would be looking for the emergency exit. But other than that, no, I could think you could handle him.
So, yeah, that's my prediction, that his weight is going to be a factor in either his death.
My prediction
or Saul's
is he's
going
to have moves like freaking Chuck Norris. It's going to be the ultimate rope-a-dope, man. This guy's going to bust in. He looks like Fat Morpheus, and he's going to move like one. Do you think that's air you're breathing?
That would be amazing.
I can't tell. My sinuses are packed with meat.
Oh, my God. All right.
Not an actual prediction. Prediction void in 48 states.
Yeah. Hawaii and Alaska. It's
yeah,
not.
They're still good in that.
So my other prediction is that every episode, because there are a bunch of them, every episode with a weapon name, someone will get killed with that weapon in that episode.
Oh.
So, like, box cutter. We saw someone get killed with box cutter. 38 snub. I think someone's going to get killed with that gun. Possibly not Gus. Bullet points, I'm not sure about. I won't predict that one, but shotgun, definitely.
Hmm. See, that could be like a reference to a football player or something.
Shotgun.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, I'm sure. Well, someone will get killed
playing
football.
Open house, someone's going to get killed, perhaps a wicked witch by
dropping a house on them.
A corner, someone will be like, you know, like triangle corner, will stab them in the eye. Problem dog.
Gonna get dog bite. Rabies.
I think you've got something here.
Right? No, I'm saying the ones with weapon names, they'll get killed with the weapon.
All right. All right.
That's my prediction.
I don't think anyone's going to be killed by a 38 snub.
Oh, I think so.
Nah.
Maybe Walt will shoot himself.
Walt just killed a bunch of people in like two episodes ago. There's no way he's going to go back to that well this soon.
Mm.
I think he's going to try, but I don't think he's going to get the audience with Gus.
I don't think it's going to be Gus that gets killed. I think someone else is going to
get
killed.
Some other schmo, huh? Yeah. Okay.
Maybe Marie.
All right.
No. Walt just guns down Marie.
Maybe one of Hank's geodes. Yeah. Wall will just flip out, shatter it.
How do you like your crystals now?
That's right.
Bam. All right, that's all I've got for predictions. Do you have any predictions this week?
No.
Or did you just make the one?
I think Jesse will snort a lot of cocaine. That's my prediction. Yeah.
Disqualified?
No. I got the one. I thought that was pretty ballsy.
Yeah, it's a ballsy call.
I don't even remember what it was, but...
Neither do I, but it was ballsy.
We'll hear it tomorrow on the podcast.
Absolutely. Okay, that's it then.
Yep.
We're not doing another outro. We're just leaving you with this.
That's right. See you next week, all.